We're doing Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. We're up to the 38th chapter. Being that it's a new semester, we'll quickly introduce. Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer is one of the earliest Midrashim that we have. Medrash is part of the Jewish tradition. In the Medrash we have the simple understanding, which is really depths of stories in Tanakh. The Medrash ordinarily takes a pasuk or takes a concept and then develops it going off on many, many tangents. Within those tangents we learn some of what happened between the lines of the Tanakh and after Tanakh. And we also have deep philosophical concepts, the understanding of how God runs the world, that are hidden within these sometimes simplistic stories. The Medrash, for much of the book, is really working, going off on tangents again, working on the one hand, it's going in the order of Jewish history, in the order of the Torah. On the other hand, the Medrash went off on a tangent about 20 chapters ago, discussing that God descended to earth 10 times. And we're up to the fourth descent. But every time, the Medrash goes off on a bunch of tangents. So the fourth descent we're going to get to in the next chapter, Perek Lamed Tes, you'll notice the next chapter begins Yirida Revi'it. The fourth time God descended to earth was. So our chapter 38, is really continuing where chapter 37 left off. Chapter 37 began with a pasuk from the prophet Amos. Friday mornings we're learning the 12 short prophets, and the one we're up to right now is Amos. So Amos summarizes all of Jewish history, and he says a frightening pasuk. He says it's like a man who ran away from the lion, and he made it only to meet up with the bear. And then the Medrash expanded on this part of the pasuk, and our Medrash is going to pick up with the continuation of the pasuk that he runs away from the bear, and he makes it into the house. When he makes it into the house, he leans against the wall, he's huffing and puffing, and a snake slithers out and bites him. So the Medrash begins with that conclusion of the pasuk. Ktiv, the pasuk says, Uva habayit, he comes into the house, he leans his hand against the wall, and the snake bites him. The Medrash understood earlier that this whole pasuk can be understood about all Jewish history. It could also be understood about Yaakov's troubles, Yaakov's challenges. His brother Esav is the lion, Lavan is the bear, and now he makes it finally back to the house. He makes it. Yaakov has contended with Esav, he's contended with Lavan, everything's okay, he's made it back home, he should be safe, he's in the land of Israel. He came leveito, to his home, be'eretz achuzato she'be'eretz Canaan, in the land that was his, the land of Canaan, and there nishacho anachash, the snake bit him. Veza nachash. What snake are we talking about? We're talking about Zeshechem ben Hamor. That is Shechem, the prince who abducted Yaakov's daughter. Shaita bito shel Yaakov yoshevet o'alim ve'lo hayta yotzet achutza. Yaakov's daughter, Dina, she was a modest girl, says the Medrash. And she was sitting at home. She wasn't going outside. Ne'asa Shechem ben Hamor. So what did Shechem, the son of Hamor, do? Hevi mesachakot ne'arot chutzala metofefot betupim. He brought young girls with tambourines outside her tent. Yatzah Dina lirot babanot hamesachakot. So Dina, she went out to see the girls. Seems like a modest scene. Separate dancing. No boys on the other side of the mechitza, only girls. The Gemara describes that one Amora asked his Rebbe, you know, when a woman puts on different forms of makeup, in their days they used to put on mud, And the woman would sit around with this mud caked on her face for a while, and then finally she'd peel it off after 2 or 3 days, and then, she'd be beautiful. So he asked his Rebbe, you know, if she's an old lady, can she also put this mud on her face? So his Rebbe said, you know, people say that when the drums start beating, the old women go out to dance just like the youngsters. Everyone, all women like dancing. So same thing, all women like jewelry and all women like thinking that they're, or really being more beautiful by putting all the mud on their face. So it doesn't matter. Chol Hamoed, the old women can do it like the young women. And here we see it. Dina, who's this modest girl, she's sitting around the house. But when the tambourine starts beating, so she peeks outside. No guys around. Everything seems okay. Coast is clear. Girls are dancing. She joins. She doesn't even dance. She's going to look. Lir'ot babanot hamsachakot. To go and see the girls who were dancing. She wasn't even going to dance. V'shalela v'shachavotam. And he abducted her. He kidnapped her. And he slept with her. And Dina should have been Yosef's wife, as the Medrash said earlier. So Dina was an exceptionally pious girl. Now other Midrashim don't talk this way. Other Midrashim go all out against Dina. There's a machlokas in Midrashim how we view Dina. Other Midrashim say, you know, Dina was supposed to be a boy. Leah was pregnant, and she turned to God and said, God, if I have another boy, then my sister Rachel, she's going to be left with only one kid. They all knew there were going to be 12 tribes. So Dina already had 6. They were up to 11. And suddenly Leah's pregnant. So Leah prayed to God. She said, if this baby is a boy, then my sister Rachel is going to be less than the maids. All the maids had 2 boys each. My sister Rachel had 1 boy. God switched the kid to a girl. And the Talmud says, you know, you can't do that. After 40 days, the fetus is defined, whether it's a boy or a girl. You can't just switch. The Talmud says, yeah, but Leah could. You know, when your prayers are like Leah, then even then you could switch. So she switched, but it had a price. The Medrash says Dina was a tomboy. She couldn't sit around the house. She was out there. And that's why the Medrash, other Midrashim, not this Midrash, other Midrashim say, you know why Dina got abducted? She was out playing. She was out, she wasn't in the bar, but she wasn't at home and she wasn't in a modest place. She was seen and she the Midrash says, the other Midrashim, there are other Midrashim that hold that Dina was not at the level of modesty that she should have been. But this Midrash already told us 2 chapters earlier that Dina was supposed to be Yosef's wife. So the Midrash is learning that Dina is a fantastic, perfect girl. She's excellent. There were 2 traditions as to how we view Dina. And so this Midrash keeps pointing out to us, she wasn't even going out of the tent, if not for the fact that he seduced her. And she didn't even see the guy around. She thought there were only girls dancing. And even though the Pasuk says he spoke to her, he convinced her, the Midrash says, no. First he abducted her and took her against her will. And she became pregnant from Shechem, and she gave birth to a baby that would later be called Osnat. So when Dina is released from when her brothers come and kill out the city and take her out, so the Pasuk says they killed Hamor and Shechem. And they took Dina out of the house of Shechem, and they left. So our sages were bothered. Why does the Pasuk point out they took her out of the house of Shechem? The Pasuk tells us they went into his castle, they killed him, they killed his father, and they took Dina out. Why does the Pasuk have to stress they took her out of the house of Shechem? So we have on tradition something that it doesn't say overtly in the Pesukim. We have on tradition that they took her out of the house, meaning out of the marriage of Shechem. They took her out of it, but they took her with baggage. They took her pregnant. They brought her back, and there's another little Jew, Osnas, that doesn't say in the Torah was born. The Torah doesn't tell us overtly about this girl, Osnas. The Torah, later on, you hit the end of the book of Bereishis, you discover that Yosef married a girl named Osnas down in Mitzrayim. And this Osnas, we have to remember, is quite a character. This girl, whose father is the non-Jew Shechem, not the finest person we have in the Tanakh, right? by a long shot. Her father is Shechem, her mother is Dinah, and in a minute we're going to see how she grew up. She, quite possibly, is the greatest woman in Jewish history. So you'll ask me, how do I know that? So I'll tell you, when Yaakov blesses Yosef, we're going to see now that Osnas was kicked out of the house. We'll read the Medrash in a second. And they sent her down to Egypt. And she was brought up in Potiphar's wife, and finally she became Yosef's wife. And then she gives Yosef two kids, Ephraim and Menashe. And Yaakov tells Yosef, all of the Jewish people will bless their kids, that they should be like Ephraim and Menashe. So you say, wait a second. What's exceptional about these kids? Two children, they grew up without the other tribes. They grew up alone in Chutz Laretz. They grew up alone in Chutz Laretz, the worst of Chutz Laretz, Egypt, where there's constant incest, and women are sleeping with women, and men are sleeping with men, and everyone, people are exchanging their wives, the most immoral place on the planet. And among all of this, in the Paro's castle, which is the worst of the worst, you have Yosef with his wife Asnas, this very same Asnas. And Asnas, right? And Asnas, well, Potiphar was a eunuch, so he couldn't have a biological daughter. In a minute, we have a lot of gaps to fill. So Asnas brings up these two kids in this environment, and they are so positive that Yaakov declares that they are equal to the other tribes. The other tribes grew up in this closed environment. You know, they grew up in Jerusalem proper with the, I'm saying not exactly Jerusalem proper, but they grew up in their little bubble. They had all their siblings, their mothers, their maids. They had the greatest environment to be good Jews. Yosef's kids, they grew up in the exact opposite. How did they come out so great? The secret is Asnas. Asnas is the secret behind Ephraim and Menashe. So, Asnas, on the one hand, the brothers say, "Out! She's the daughter of Shechem, not in our house." On the other hand, she comes back. She ends up marrying Yosef, and she proves herself big time. Back to the Medrash. We'll get to your question, just remind me. So, Dinah is pregnant. She gives birth to Asnas. V'amru b'nei Yisrael l'orga. So now, the brothers say, this child is a bastard, it's a product of Shechem, she's got to go with Shechem. And Yaakov doesn't agree. Shachshav yomru kol ha'aretz sheyesh betznut bo le'Yaakov. They said, if you leave this girl alive, you know what they're going to say? Oh yeah, they bumped off Shechem, they bumped off all of the city, everyone, because they say they were in cahoots with this act of rape. But the girl that was born from the rape, that girl they left around, because that's their sister. Hey, the whole world is going to say, there isn't justice here. Hey, if you bump off the whole city, you got to bump off the girl too. Yaakov doesn't agree. Masa Yaakov, so what does Yaakov do? He doesn't trust his kids. Doesn't want to leave them around. And at the end of his life, when he blesses Yosef and his siblings, he says, you know, you, Shimon and Levi, you bumped off the whole city. Shimon v'Levi achim, you brothers. Klei chamas mechirotehim. Your weapons are stolen goods. You guys shouldn't have been bumping off the city of Shechem. Ki ba'pam harigu ish, because in their anger, they killed a man. Virtzonam, and it was their desire, ikusho, to uproot the ox. Who's the ox? The ox is Yosef. Yosef in the blessings is called the ox. Bechol shoro hadalo. Yosef in Yaakov's blessings, Yosef is called an ox. The prime ox is Yosef. That's how Yaakov calls him. Yaakov says, you too, Shimon and Levi, if you would have had your way, uvil tzonam, and going with your thoughts, with your desires, ikirusho, you would have uprooted the ox, Yosef, because Yosef's whole future was contingent on this girl you wanted to kill. You'd said, no, this girl is the product of this act. No, the girl did nothing wrong. The city was wrong. Shechem was wrong. Everyone was wrong. But the girl did nothing wrong. And proof of it is that she ended up being the greatest mother, quite possibly, in all of Jewish history. Asnas.
Who is this girl?
The Radal says this. The Radal, Rav David Luria. The Radal says this parish. Isn't it beautiful? Yeah. Well, you guys said you wanted a little bit of depth with the Medrash, okay? So, Yaakov takes his granddaughter Asnas. Me'asa Yaakov, what did he do? Hevi tzitz. He brought a slither of gold. What do they call that thing they wear over their forehead, the girls? What do they call that?
Tiara.
Something like a tiara, right? Yeah, okay. Vekatav alav shema kodesh. And Amet, we'll call it a tiara for lack of a better word. Maybe it's even accurate. I don't think so. I think it's a little different, but okay. He wrote God's holy name. Vetalal tzavara. And on this slither of gold, he hung it as a necklace around her neck. Tzitz ordinarily is a slither that goes around the forehead. He attached a chain to it and hung it around her neck. Veshilecha vehalchala. And he sent her off, and she went her merry way. So, the question here is, at what age did this happen exactly that he sent her off? You know, the story seems to say it happened when she was born. There's a midrash that says that he sent her in a sneh. He put her in by a thorn bush, and that's why she was called Osnat. At any rate, somehow, and we in this midrash we don't have the details of how it came to be, she became Potiphar's adopted daughter. Potiphar in Mitzrayim has this adopted daughter of Asnas. How exactly over here, it doesn't say. If I remember correctly, there are other midrashim that discuss how she got, and some midrashim say that Yaakov had a caravan take her down. He said, if I can't protect her here, then at least we'll send her far away. But he sent her with this. And there's another midrash, I think, that says that he sent her with a locket. And in that locket was the whole story of who she was. V'akol tzafui.
Does anyone say that Yosef shot her?
I'm unfamiliar with that. It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit into the story. Because Yosef was sold into Egypt naked. How could he take anyone? Sold.
Maybe she was somehow just like
I don't know. I don't know. The Medrash over here says that the angel came and took her down to Egypt. But what does the Medrash mean exactly? The Medrash says that Kol Tzafui Livnei Kadosh Baruch Hu, God knows everything. Ve'arad Michael Amalach ve'orida leMitzrayim leBeto Shel Potifera. So the angel Michael came down, and he took her down to Mitzrayim, to the house of Potipharah, so that she would be down there. The Zohar adds a line to this, and the Zohar says, and Michal stuck with her to ensure she wouldn't be violated. Michal stayed with her down there in Potiphar's house. Shaita Osnat ruya li Yosef liisha, because in God's planning, Osnas was meant to be Yosef's wife. V'aita ishto shel Potiphera akara, and Potiphar's wife was barren, so she didn't have any children. V'gidela ota kevat, she raised her as though she was her own daughter. So this Medrash says that Potiphar's wife was barren. The Talmud in Sota says that Potiphar, when he purchased Yosef, we said in Egypt men were sleeping with men and women with women and every immoral activity was happening. So when Potiphar purchased Yosef, he purchased him with the thoughts of having a boy that he's going to sleep with. Yosef was a good looking boy. And the angel Gabriel came down and castrated Potiphar. And that gives us a little bit of an insight as to why Potiphar's wife was so attracted to Yosef. A little bit. Yes, Betzalel.
It's written that the tzitz was put around her neck with the name of God. Can we compare that to the goat that he sent to Azazel?
Yeah.
In the way of how do we compare to the goat?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a fantastic thought.
Also
wow.
Was sent away.
Right.
To do kapara for the people. You know, can we compare? So by sending us on away, can we say that it was to hide that Dina was raped and she had a daughter in a certain way?
I have to think about it. You know, you gave me a very interesting thing to think about. I have to think about it. It's interesting. I don't know what to say. I don't know. Requires thought. I don't know.
Well, is there an observation about and a question that about the brothers of Yosef? He always seemed to get the impression of them being very dependent, and even their father already doesn't trust them. We have the story of the city of Shechem, so they go behind their father's back, and then he subsequently doesn't trust them in regards to Bosnat, and then we have the situation with Yosef. So what's the things that we create, we have of them, and being stigmatized here, they seem to be working independently of their father.
That's too much of a tangent. In one of our Parsha classes last year or the year before, we discussed it, but it'll take too long. You want me to say 1 minute's worth, but you won't be satisfied with it. So should I give you 1 minute or move forward? Okay. When Yaakov is going to meet up with his brother Esav, Yaakov is telling each child where to stand. They're like little children. You go down a few psukim, and the whole city of Shechem, his children are running the show. To the point where, after the story of Shechem, Yaakov says, "Achartem oti," and his children aren't these docile creatures that just accept their father's rebuke, but quite the contrary. They answer back, "Hachezonai aset achoteinu," and they get the last word. Till Yaakov's deathbed, he's not going to answer them. It's not clear what the discrepancy between what Yaakov was planning and what his children did exactly was. It's a machlokas rishonim. Some say Yaakov thought that they would kill Shechem and Hamor, take her back, but not kill the inhabitants of the city. You could look at the Rishonim over there. It's not clear exactly where the discrepancy was, and it's not so clear that they did it behind Yaakov's back. The fact that they were independent, well, they were entitled to be independent. When it came to Yosef, you see that God agreed with him. God joined their Bezdin in the Cherem not to reveal what happened with Yosef. So it's not so, you know, they weren't little children. They might have been young, but they weren't little. They were big people. Now, we can't... do the math. How old were they? 9? 11?
When they sold their brother,
they were older. I'm talking about when they fought Shechem. These weren't small people. We have to be careful before we judge them. At the same time, you see that Yaakov keeps suspecting them. Yaakov says to them, let's do some math here. Reuven lost his rights to the firstborn. Who was next in line? Yosef. He disappeared. Who was next in line? The one after Reuven. Shimon. He disappeared. Now you want to take Binyamin? He's next in line. No way. You see, Chazal say, when Yaakov said, Chaya ra'a chalatu, a bad animal destroyed him. Chazal say he was saying, and I don't know if it was an animal or one of you animals. Right? Animals not in a bad way, in a good way. Chazal say that each tribe corresponded to a certain animal and their blessings. So this needs work. Exactly the balance of powers between Yaakov and his children. It needs work. Yeah.
And did the brothers really? The depravity you're describing in Israel and in Egypt makes it seem all the much more worse that the brothers would sell them to people who were going that way.
Right?
Like I can understand, okay, they say he's destructive to our family, we need to get rid of him. But But then, did they need to send him to a place that was, you know, more destructive?
So, for lack of time, we'll just say they sold him to the Midianites. The Midianites sold him to the Ishmaelim. Right? Ah, that's one answer. There's more to say, but for lack of time, that's one possible answer. Correct.
They didn't want to go there.
Yeah, but that should bother you because, okay, we can't go into that. Back to the Medrash. וכשירד יוסף למצרים לקחה לו, and when Yosef went down to Mitzrayim, he married her. So here again, שנאמר, because the pasuk says, ויתן לו את אסנת בת פוטיפר הכהן און לאישה. The pasuk says, Paro gave Yosef the shidduch of Asnas, the daughter of Potiphera. The simple reading of the pasuk seems to say, Yosef had a history. It's not good when a politician has a history. So Paro tells Potiphar, look, I know you had a claim against him that he tried to commit adultery with your wife. But I want you to clear the slate. So you're going to give your daughter to marry off to Yosef. And that's going to be a sign that nothing really happened. We're clearing the slate. Yosef has no history. That's a simple reading of the pasuk. Simple reading is that Paro gave him her. You want to read it more simply, you could say, hey, they were together in the same house. Paro says, okay, this is a girl you know, marry her. You want to read more deeply, Potiphera is Kohenon, he's a priest. It's always good to have a hand in the priesthood too. You know, Paro is king. In Egypt there was always a balance of power between the king and the priests. If he could have his second in command married to the high priest's daughter, that's a good thing. You could explain it in many ways, but Chazal don't tell us any of that. Chazal say Yosef chose her. And even though the pasuk describes Paro as making the shidduch, Chazal tell us Yosef made the shidduch. How does Yosef know who she is? He is much older than her, big deal. And Yitzchak, who was 37 years older than Rivka, no. Avram was 10 years older than Sarah. What's the big deal? Why does that matter? What's 10 years?
Isn't he somewhat
closely related also? Did you know? She is his niece, which is permissible even today. A person's allowed to marry his niece. You're not allowed to marry an aunt, but you're allowed to marry a niece. So the Chazal must have had a tradition or some derivation that Yosef requested this, even though the pasuk seems to say Paro gave it him. Shimon veLevi kinu kina gdola al aznut. Shimon and Levi, they were very zealous against znus, promiscuity. Shneimal, the pasuk says, Achiz zonai yasu tachotenu. Will he make our sister like a prostitute? So each one took his sword and killed all the people of Shechem. When Yaakov heard it, he got very scared. That's what he tells them. You've destroyed me. And later on, at the end of his life, he curses their anger. So you see, Yaakov wasn't too pleased with what happened here. Yeah.
Originally, his first response is fear about the repercussions, so perhaps a more pragmatic response, fear of the repercussions, and then later on in his life, it seems to be more on the principle of what they did.
But that makes sense, no? There's a time for worrying about practical. First you gotta live, and then you worry about the principles. וכששמע יעקב נתראה הרבה מאוד, when Yaakov heard, he got very scared, שאמר, עכשיו יצאו כל עמי הארץ, ויאספו עליי ויארגוני. He said, now, all the nations of the land will gather and kill me. התחיל מקלל רוגזם של בניו. So he started cursing their anger. So you see that the Medrash is learning that even though that the Torah describes his cursing their anger at a later date, the Medrash learns that he cursed their anger then and there. Which is another answer to your question, Yosef. Shneimal, the pasuk says, in the blessings of the end of his life, it says, "Arur apam, cursed is their anger." Ve'od shekilel et charbam b'lashon yevanit, he cursed their swords in Greek, as he said, "Klei chamas mechirotehem, sheyevanim korim lecherev macher." And I think we'll have to pick up here. Everyone's going to go to sleep, it looks like. So we're going to pause here. And we'll pick up here, Bezalel Hashem, either next week or in 2 weeks. We'll see.